I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello, welcome to Going Off Track.
Hello.
I am Jonah.
I'm Brad.
Brad, why are you talking like that? It's very weird.
I don't know. I've been speaking into this microphone now for a couple hours.
We've been talking a lot. We did a lot of podcasting last night. Then we've been podcasting at Brad's place today. I feel like I've been talking a lot.
Yeah. Or listening a lot.
Or listening a lot. Talking and listening.
Trying to listen. You know, listening is hard, man. Listening's harder than talking. You know that, right?
Yes.
That's why most marriages fail.
Podcasting is a good exercise in learning how to listen, I think.
Probably is, yeah. Especially this kind of podcast, unscripted, and when you don't have any fucking questions anyway, you better be listening.
Yeah, I took some notes for this one. We have a pretty big guest on this week, and I wanted to do my research because this person has a new record coming out, and then we ended up just talking about old Florida hardcore bands.
This classic going off
classic
track episode.
Something
right here.
I didn't need to research at all. Something I know super well, but I never really get to talk about. So this is really fun for us. We hope you dig it. Today on the podcast, Chris Carrabba, aka Dashboard Confessional, and Dashboard's first record in 8 years, Crooked Shadows, comes out February 9th on Fueled by Ramen. So definitely check that out. They're going on tour to support it with our friends in Beach Slang. And that tour is going to be January, February, March. March 20th to April 21st. Headline tour, Dashboard with special guest Beach Slang.
That's awesome.
Yeah, so shout out to Ed and James and everyone in that band.
Yeah.
And like I said, Chris has a new record and he was doing a press day and... Yeah.
And he'd obviously talked enough about his new record.
Yeah. Yeah. So we talked about, you know, we talked a little about the record. The record's good. You should definitely check it out. But yeah, we talked a lot about Chris's history in the Florida hardcore scene and how it kind of made him who he is today and how he kind of came up in kind of a tough scene. And I feel like he's so associated with this kind of like emo kind of world and stuff. And he definitely, that's part of it. But he's like a legit.
He's a tough guy.
He's a legit dude. Like, yeah, he's like a tough guy. He's like a scrappy guy. He really like has like a solid ideology about where it comes from and how he carries that into what he does. And he like still is like a big supporter of that scene and newer bands in that scene. And it's really cool to see someone on his level still be so engaged in kind of their roots and sort of that world. So I thought that was awesome. So you're going to dig this podcast. Before we start, we want to give a shout out, as always, to Pulse Music.
Pulse Music.
Where we're recorded. They've been super cool to us. And if you want to do a session there.
Just give them a call. They're easy to find.
Yeah. So shout out to Steve Rawalski for engineering this, as always. And shout out to Pulse for letting us do it. And yeah, enough talk. Let's get into this podcast with Chris Carrabba.
It's going on.
So Chris, how's it going?
It's going well, man.
You were doing like all this promo stuff.
Yeah.
Are you tired? Are you feeling good?
I feel good.
Yeah.
I feel good. You know, it's fun to do this promo when you're like excited and fresh off a nice 8-year break.
Yeah.
You know, I wouldn't say you should take a break for 8 years between every record, but if you do, you come back pretty refreshed and this stuff doesn't feel as... These kinds of days can be a grind, but they feel really exciting because I'm excited.
Yeah. So 8 years, but you were touring a lot in between that.
Yeah, absolutely. I went back to Further, started another band called Twin Forks, did some solo stuff, but by and large, stayed away from Dashboard as a band for a number of years, till about 4 years ago, and then waited until the songs came. Didn't just try to force it just because we were selling tickets, you know?
Yeah. I mean, why do you think, because it seemed to me like Dashboard is a kind of band that like got really big and then kind of stayed big. Mm-hmm. And it seems like it's still really big. I mean, what do you think it is about the songs or people kind of still connect to it?
I don't.
I know it's kind of hard to answer.
Yeah, I guess. I don't know. And I'm wary of trying to decode it.
Yeah.
Because I think if I aim for that, I'm going to get it wrong for sure. I'm sure I'll miss it. I will tell you that I feel pretty lucky about that, though. Because when we came back from taking time off, I thought by rights, we'd be playing, you know, pretty small clubs, you know, the equivalent of the old basement shows. And I was okay with that. I was ready for that. I was ready to build it back up from the ground up.
Yeah.
And in fact, we came back and we're playing amphitheaters. Somebody kept it alive while we were gone.
Yeah. Is it like, this is just how I would view it, which I'm sure isn't how you view it. But like, was there thought like going to Crooked Shadows, like how much deliberation is there? Like, is there pressure to be like, oh, people still love us? Like, I don't want to screw this up. Or is it more like I'm excited to get these songs out?
Well, when they were done and I knew what the songs were and the record was, I've been really excited to get it out. Before the song started coming or the inspiration started coming, I was kind of keenly aware that, if this stuff that I came up with, if it wasn't the best thing that I've done yet, or if at least I didn't think so, it could only hurt us to put it out.
Right.
And so that's what took so long. I waited till the inspiration was real and very strong. And for my, and then I had to wade through writing songs and then being hyper critical of what was happening. So that took a bit of time too.
Yeah, I'm sure. I mean, how long was the process maybe start to finish with the record as far as like when you started writing to sort of now?
You know, probably took, well, it was longer. It was over the span of time was longer than the amount of time spent because I kept going on tour.
Right, right.
I'm not sure if I could boil it down to how long exactly, but you know, whenever we weren't on tour for the last 3 years, I was working on the record.
Okay. And I was curious, we were talking about this a little bit. The first time I saw you, Begging Across America tour stopped at Crazy Fest.
That's right.
So the whole tour played one day.
Mm-hmm.
And it was you, I think Save the Day, Hot Rod Circuit. And you came down the audience. Some guy was like holding a sign up or something. Do you remember this?
Yeah.
And you like kind of came down and confronted him. And mm-hmm. I remember being like, whoa, this is like, I thought it was like pretty cool.
Yeah, I was, I think I was ready at that point. I'd been taught that like, if I didn't stick up for myself to the one guy, it was going to be a lot more guys.
Yeah.
Eventually. So, everybody had a right to not like it. But I had a right to disagree with how they told me so.
Where did you kind of pick that up? Was that just from growing up or like from like the punk scene?
I think
or
growing
like...
up in the punk scene.
Yeah.
Growing up maybe in not the best neighborhoods and kind of learning early that you can take a punch. Now, I'm not saying I can throw a punch, but you get kind of brave when you realize you can get hit in the face and it just hurts and that's it. You don't die.
Yeah.
So I learned that kind of early and that made me, this has been a long time since I've had any incidents like this, but it made me braver than I might've otherwise been. I don't know. I probably saw Ian MacKay do it.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, I know I did. I know I saw him stop a show and give money back and throw somebody out. And I just thought, there's something to that. There's something to the, it's their right not to watch me or to not like me. But it's, but I have the right, like I said, to disagree with how they're telling me. Sometimes I agreed with how they told me.
Yeah.
I thought it was okay. And I'd say, all right, I hear you. You don't like it. I'm going to keep going, though. We both agree that you don't like it, but I'm going to keep going. And I've had people that, like, it's rare, but I've had people after a confrontation. And by the way, we're talking years ago. This does not happen anymore. I mean, it sure, maybe it does in some small measure, but it happened a lot at first. Because first of all, there was like this people that were angry that I wasn't in further anymore. Then there were people that were angry that anybody would play an acoustic guitar to punk rockers. And then there were people that just thought it was something kind of like funny to do to get their friends all amped. So I dealt with this a little, you know, for a while, and then it kind of went away. And then we were maybe more lauded for a little while, and then we got popular and the arrows came back out. But all that stuff taught me how to remain sort of humble and measured through when the real ride began, you know.
What was it like? What was that scene kind of like in Florida, like when you were getting into punk and hardcore? Like that, like, were there a lot of bands? Like, was that?
Well, we were, somebody referred to it as self-starters the other day. I thought it was good. Because there wasn't you know, we all lived in like the Lauderdale, Miami area, which is very far south in Florida. So it was seldom that the bands we really loved would come all the way down to us. They might get to Gainesville, but usually they'd go to Atlanta and we'd drive up to Atlanta to see them, but they never come to us. So we made our own scene. And it was really great, not just because the bands ended up being really great. Some of them did. A lot of them did, as a matter of fact. But even before any of them were great, when they were really not great, the fan base was great. Like, we were all supporting each other's bands. We were all, it was almost genreless because there were only so many fans, and we were just going to support the idea of live music even more so than the kind of live music that we felt most connected to. But I felt most connected to, like, hardcore and punk, and that's kind of where I fell in. That's the kind of music I like to play and listen to. But there was almost like a communal thing, and then there was a kind of like a darker scene going on at the same time with a lot of skinhead presence and then like an outright, like, we found out this one club that we played at all the time was like owned by some like white supremacists. And we're talking about like a largely like Cuban and Latino audience.
Yeah, it seems like a odd area.
For racists?
Well, not for racists, but specifically Fort Lauderdale, Miami kind of.
Yeah, well, they're all these hardcore kids. Like from like Hialeah, they were tough as nails, man, and they were awesome, and they were but it clashed with those skinhead folks. I mean, there were sharps too, but there was also racist skins, and then there was the straight up like white supremacists, and then there was this weird like fake vampire scene at the same club, like guys milling about in like long trench coats and calling themselves the Council of Elders. And I was like, I did not want to be a part of that.
Yeah, yeah.
That scene whatsoever. So it's yeah, not that they'd have me, but it seemed like a pretty discerning crew. But it was a tough, it was both sides of the coin. It was really welcoming and embraced you and embraced me, young kid. I made the cut somehow, and they taught me a lot about the right way, in their opinion, of doing things. And that had to, there was like a strict code of how things went. And it wasn't like so in such a way that it was like a serious, like, you do this or you're dead kind of thing. It was just like, no, we like No, you you're not here. Like, okay, so there was like the straight edge faction, and that was huge in that area. I wasn't straight edge, but there was like this idea like that if you're here for the show, that's the show you're here for. Like, you're not here to just get plastered. And if you're a fan, and if you're here for the show because you're playing the show, you're not here to get plastered. Those kids aren't here to get high. These kids aren't here to get drunk. It was like sacred. Like, be real about what you're doing here. And I kind of carry that till now. Like, I'll have drinks after the show, and I'll sometimes go out after the show. But I still I've never unlearned that thing. The highlight of my night is never good. It's never going to be better than the show. And I feel lucky for that, because it keeps me incredibly interested in what I get to do for a living.
Yeah, that's amazing. I mean, who are some of the kind of like punk and hardcore bands you were kind of like, we're getting into sort of like...
Like regionally there?
Yeah.
Well, so early on, there was like, you know, there was Culture. Culture was...
Steve Looker's band,
Looker's band.
Yep.
With Damien.
Yes. I saw you tweeted something about Damien's
new music.
New music, which
Damien Dunn.
Damien Dunn, which is really cool.
It's really cool, man. That guy just keeps pushing the envelope. So he's just one of the great... He's like a superstar. He has so much of that thing. But Damien would go on to be in, let's see, Morning Again, and then Shai Hulud. This is as the singer. And he would leave and they'd replace him because I don't know why he would leave. Spectacular.
I never knew who's in Shai Hulud.
Oh yeah, the first EP. Chad sang. I have the demo of the first EP. It's the same, but Damien singing instead of Chad. It was incredible. It was incredible. And Chad, they found the one guy that could do Damien's thing, because Chad is, boy man, he is fierce, and he was 15 at the time.
Yeah, I saw them on that. I saw they played in Cleveland at the old Grog Shop.
Oh, yeah.
And I saw them, yeah.
You saw them with the original lineup?
Yeah.
That's awesome. Yeah, so I saw their first show before that lineup even. I guess it wasn't the original lineup. And
so we're talking about Chad Gilbert from Newfound Glory, just for listeners in case they're not schooled on the Florida hardcore scene.
Right, so I just figure everybody knows
me
that.
Me too. They should. So you guys should know this.
But so Damien, and then he went from Culture, then he went to Morning Again, then he went to Shai Hulud, then he went to Esrin's Rust. And then another early band that I was crazy about was called Machete, and another one was Floor, and I think those two combined to be Torch now, the band Torch.
Okay.
And then we had the bands from like North Florida that would come down, like Hot Water Music, which to us, they were everything. Like, they were the standard bearers for all things. They really went out on a limb by taking hardcore and making it melodic at that point. And it was a new thing to us. There was a band called Tension. There were two Tensions, one in New York and one in Florida. Obviously the Florida one, they were pretty inspirational to us all. And that kid was like a senior leader. His name was Mike Hurley. He passed away, unfortunately, last year. But he was like a scene leader. He was like, there were all these older kids, still kids, you know, probably maybe the oldest was maybe at the oldest. They were in their very early 20s, but they all kind of took us like grommets under their wing and taught us about what's important about music. And they would cherry pick for you, which would be different for me, what might change your life, what music to hand you. It was great. It was just this great tradition that they had. And somebody had done it for them, you know.
And Chad obviously was a huge Discount fan. Were you also mm-hmm. into them?
Yeah, yeah. My first, one of my earlier bands, Vacant Andes, did a lot of shows with Discount. And then that was one band that I thought would, like, you just think is going to explode. I thought they would explode.
Totally.
I thought they were going to explode. I mean, and respectively, they've all had brilliant careers, but I thought that band at that time would have exploded. Maybe it's cooler they didn't. It was a kind of our secret.
Yeah. I mean, what's it like when you're like, when you're doing like these days, like a co-headling tour with like Third Eye Blind or something, like, how do you sort of bring, I don't know, like, do you feel like you're the same person? Like, how do you bring like that attitude, I guess, or those experiences to a show like that? Or like, how does that feel, I guess? I don't know exactly what I'm trying to say, but those worlds just seem so different.
Well, I think that, whatever those things were that I learned that informed me and taught me to be the person that I am, that just remains, you know? I'm not trying to put on the South Florida hardcore show.
Right.
When we're playing a co-headlining tour with Third Eye Blind, but if we're, I mean, and I'm not trying to do that either when we are out and we have Taking Back Sunday with us. That's just not the band we are anymore. But it's still, the lessons are still there. I think it's a unique thing. It's a good club to be from, the hardcore scene. It's a really good club because at least our corner of it was. Because among other things, it really is, for us, was a lifelong bond. I'm still friends. I don't know a lot of people that are friends now with the people that they met when they were 15, you know, but we connected through something that meant something special to us. And quite a few of us actually ended up having a career in music. That's helped us to stay connected and we've, made an effort to hold that scene together, even though we're not necessarily, not many of us even live there anymore. I don't. Chad doesn't. Chad and I actually live down the street from each other in a different town now.
Yeah, I mean, we were emailing about this the other day when your alternative press cover, which must have been like early 2000s, I'd imagine.
Yeah, probably 2002, maybe.
And probably 2002, because I started working there. I was a music editor there from 02 to 05.
Yeah, it was two or three,
yeah,
something like that.
And that was really interesting because that was like, Chris was on the cover, and there was like this door that opened to in his chest. And it was like, at that point, it was like Cold Chamber 1 month. And it was all like Cold Chamber, Slipknot, Mudvayne. And then it was that cover. And then it was like Slipknot, but then Newfound Glory. And then Slipknot, and then Good Charlotte. And I feel like that cover really kind of changed the whole direction of that magazine. And it's kind of like still where it's at.
Well,
it was a real, like, it was a really risky move at that point.
And, I mean, nobody told me. I thought it was super awesome to be on the cover.
We thought it was awesome, too.
And I was like, you know, I was certainly a fan of the magazine anyway. And we were talking, reminiscing about the photograph itself. I think, somebody on my team, I don't know who exactly, was not upset, but wary of the idea of this. I don't think Photoshop itself was like, photoshopping pictures was like a real thing yet. Right?
Yeah, I don't think so either.
So they were really wary of this idea. So just to describe the photo, it's just me standing there. There was a stairwell in which we did another segment of the photo shoot, and they just shot the stairwell. Right?
Yeah.
With the door open.
I think so. Yes.
And they photoshopped that onto my chest.
Yep, your chest.
And so this was only described. No shots were sent. And so I'm oblivious. I'm just psyched to be on the cover. And the cover comes out. The magazine did well, as I recall. And I just remember getting a call from them being like, this sold really well. We're really excited. And we hope this, you know, helps you. And it really did help me. And then, like, I heard later that I hated the cover. And I was like, what? The cover I got to be on? Hated it? And I was so perplexed. It took me a long time to find out the root of this. And it was that somebody on my team, maybe the record label, I don't know, or maybe my manager, I'm not sure, was really resistant to the idea as it was described to him.
Okay.
But if you see this thing, it's a really well done
It looks good.
Thing.
I totally remember that.
Do you remember it? Yeah. But I was emailing Chris recently and I had it, I guess just from working there, I was like, I should bring this up. I was like, no, I think Chris hates this. And then I was like, Chris probably doesn't care, even if he did hate. Like,
I mean, I loved it at the time.
Yeah.
I thought it was like, the idea is like, they're getting inside of me. I get the idea here. It's a metaphor, right? You know?
Sure.
I was like, this is great. And I thought I looked handsome on the cover. And
you look
I was
great.
Like, I'm on the cover of a magazine. I don't care if they put a bozo nose on me. I don't care what they do. I'm going to come on the magazine cover. And that's funny that you, when we were emailing, I thought that was really funny that you brought that up. And I was like, yeah. I think people think I hate that thing, but I love it. And then we did another cover not long after that for your magazine, and I didn't get any like bad vibe. So It wasn't even by then, the next cover a few months later, still no one had told me that I hated the cover. So it was much later that I found out I hated the cover.
Yeah, I don't know when I heard it. It just was like part of my consciousness at one point.
Yeah, I don't. I don't know even where to begin with that one because it's like I just simply didn't hate it. I thought it was cool. At worst, I thought this is the best thing that's ever happened to me. So okay. I'm not sure how that translates to like now. How dare they? How dare they put me on the cover of their magazine, promote my band, help my career, make me look good. Write a nice story about me. These guys got a lot of gall.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's a good point. I mean, my other question is, you look the same. You look exactly the same, I feel like, as you did on that cover.
They photoshopped me to look older in that cover. That's why I hated it so much. I look, Mimi looks so old.
Well, Photoshop was new then. So.
Do you like, what was it? You drink a lot of water, you exfoliate. Like, what's your secret?
Yeah, I moisturize.
You moisturize?
No, I don't, I'm just Italian, I think, and I really don't know. People keep telling me that now all of a sudden. I was always told I looked very young.
Okay.
At every age. So it's paying off now.
Yeah.
You know, for a while it was like, oh God. I know, because there's a point where you're like, you know, 25 and you don't want to be carded anymore, you know.
Sure.
But now I feel it's paying off. It's one of the, you know, I suffer from small face, so that probably helps a little bit, you know. So I don't know. What do I know? It feels good. But I'm also like, you know, I maintain that the fountain of youth or the secret of the fountain of youth is not losing your connection to music. I believe that as not just someone that plays it, but is just embraces it and loves it and is still just obsessed with music. It brings you youth. I don't know why. I believe that's true.
It does seem to be the case.
Yeah, I guess you're right.
I'm going to look at my peers, my friends that I grew up with and the ones that either play music or just have your, you know, pick job A, B, or C, but they are just... That's still their escape. They just look a lot better than the friends of mine that like golf now.
Yeah.
Instead.
Yeah.
And, you know.
Loud music keeps your hair on.
Yeah.
It keeps your hair on.
Yeah. Yo, it's good.
My friend Jonathan said to me at some point, I was like, man, this one was a good one. I was talking about the tour that led to the tour and then another tour and another tour. I was just giving him the rundown. He's like, man, heavy is the head that wears the hair.
That's good. What's it sort of like, obviously all this, like there is this whole like emo revival sort of thing now. I mean, what's it like for this thing to kind of like be such a big part of kind of this movement originally, whether you wanted to be or not? And then have it kind of come full circle again. I mean, does that feel nostalgic for you? Does it feel good? Does it feel surreal? Do you pay attention to it, really?
Well, I pay attention to it because I love the bands. I really love the bands. It feels like a return to form. I feel like the music I grew up on that was when I say I was a hardcore kid, that did not mean I only listened to, I don't know, Hatebreed, you know.
Right.
I listened to Sunny Day Real Estate and Sensefield and all these bands that were like tangentially connected to the hardcore scene. Those bands were the emo bands. And when they started calling my band emo and my friends' bands emo, we didn't. And this predates it being like a snarky statement or an insult, but it did feel misappropriated somehow, because it seemed to apply to bands that we looked up to, that existed already, that we didn't think we could ever be as good as at, and maybe never were. I don't know, but we were inspired by them. And then, you know, a few of those short musical generations go by. And the scene we're from becomes more, maybe starts to become more about like fashion and haircuts, or the bands that are popular at that time are more interested than we were in fashion and haircuts. And then the bands after them started with fashion and haircuts and then thought maybe we should play some music. And now, somebody called it the makeup years. I wasn't as interested in as many bands. Some of them, yes. I was, but I wasn't as interested in as many bands from that scene at that time. But now the bands that came out seem to be coming out in the last 5 years from a similar scene seem to be looking towards maybe my early era as the latest era of influence. It's like things
right.
up to us and Get Up Kids and so on. It's really like Mineral and American Football, Cap'n Jazz, and certainly Sunny Day Real Estate. And it's great for me because I love that music. I love that music so much. You know, some band sounds like Jawbreaker. I'm going to like the band.
Right.
100%. So I feel like it's a great time, and I think I like that there's more women, in bands and leading bands, in that scene. There weren't even that many that I can only really remember Discount, but that was more pop punk, right?
Right, right.
But I really can only remember like Jaejoon and like Rainier Maria.
Did you ever see that band Ashes?
And Ashes.
I love that band.
Yeah.
And it was like so odd, this band with this like girl would get up and had this beautiful voice. It's like a hardcore basement
or
show.
Straight up hardcore with screaming. You remember Walls of Jericho?
Oh yeah.
She was just fierce, you know?
Yeah.
But I love that, you know, like Phoebe Bridgers is just like a powerhouse. Julian is just a powerhouse. They're just like really very, very, very talented and clearly drawing on, not clearly, but I happen to know them. So I know they were, or at least Julian, I know she's influenced by these bands that I was influenced by too. So I'm probably predisposed to like that. But man, there's some great, I do like what I'm hearing these women do. It makes it all the more exciting.
Yeah, and you're right. Like, I felt like back then, too, it's like everyone listened to Earth Crisis, but everyone also listened to, like, The Promise Ring.
Yeah, and I didn't think there was anything weird about that.
Yeah.
Now, that changed a little for me. I had a little rude awakening. So, you know, we were talking a bit about how Florida was a little geographically isolated and we made our own scene. And so you might have like Newfound Glory and Shai Hulud and Les and Jake. So you got like a pop band, a hardcore band, pop punk band, a hardcore band, and a ska band playing on the same bill. And nobody judged it or thought this one's lame, this one's cool, this one's lame. Everybody was just psyched as we were swept up in the moment. It was incredible. I thought that's how every town was till I started touring. And so only world I knew was the punk and hardcore scene. So when I picked up an acoustic guitar and I started touring, I mean, I guess I should have played coffee shops, but I didn't know like this coffee shop circuit.
Right.
I still have never played a coffee shop in my life. So I would show up and the bill would just be like the same band after the same band after the same band after the same band, and then maybe me. Now, this served me really well, it turned out, but it was accidental. That was part of like the Vagrant thing that I liked a lot. When we were, you know, Vagrant America, those bands, there was a through line there that you could say that we were clearly from the same scene, but the bands didn't sound all that much like each other. And I think, but we had a spirit of intention that was similar. And we had this actual spoken agreement to work together. It wasn't even unspoken. Like, we're going to work really, really hard. And we're going to make sure we work hard together. And you're going to, like, I'm going to book the southern leg of this tour. And Saves Day is going to book the Northeast because they're from there. And the Get Up Kids are going to book the Midwest because they're from there. And just went on like that. You know, and we would work we were in it together. And when some of us started to succeed, like the Get Up Kids first, they took us all out on tour. And then Saves the Day started to do well, and they took us all out on tour. And then I did better, and I took everybody out on tour. And there was no, like, bum out. There was no, like, rooting against the other guy as if there was only room for one to succeed. You were just so psyched that your friends were doing well, and you got to be along with them for the ride. Things got a little homogenized in the scene a little bit later. It seemed to be like one style of music and on each bill.
Yeah.
I think it's become less so. That's not the case anymore. I think things have become way more adventurous again.
Yeah.
I really love it.
I grew up in Cleveland and it was like metal hardcore band after metal hardcore band, and I was into that music, but yeah, after seeing like six bands like that, it's like,
it's kind of nice to break
you
it
were
up.
Into that music.
I was, yeah, believe it or not. But I mean,
I'm saying you still are.
I still am. Me too. I'm still very into it. New Integrity record is actually really, really excellent. You should check it out. But I was curious, like, were there ever shows where like you're backstage and you're about to go on, and it's like all heavy bands and you have your acoustic guitar and you're like, ugh, I don't want to do this.
No. I thought, I'm going to get killed, but I never thought I don't want to do this.
Really?
I thought, I want to do this. I really thought, you know, we were talking about like the older kids took me under their wing and my friends under their wing. One of them told me, if you go out, if you do something against the grain and you put yourself in a position where you have to win them over, and you do win them over, you'll have them forever. But if you're just one of many, they'll like you for a little while. And that really stuck with me. So even though I knew it was going, some nights were going to be tough, and they were tough. So one example, I remember, you know, we were opening for Snapcase and H2O, and I was just getting pelted with quarters. Face, guitar, just pelted. And I came off the stage I started to get off the stage when my show was done. And I learned very early on to just ignore it. Started leaving the stage and Toby from H2O said, what are you doing? And I said, huh? He goes, where do you think you're going? I said, well, my set's done. He goes, you earned that money. Get up there and get that money. I went up there and I grabbed the quarters, and then he ran back to the merch table and he put on a Dashboard shirt and he came back and he told the audience off. He said something to the effect of like, that's more punk than anything you've ever done in your life. Standing up here, that's more brave what he did or whatever. And we sold so much merch that night.
That's like, Toby, fucking awesome.
I was like, thinking I'm going to start handing out quarters before the show. Yeah. Get Toby on my side every night.
That's amazing.
We'll be swimming in merch money.
Oh, man. That is so wild. I mean, what sort of... man, that blows me. I mean, do you still like... What am I trying to say? I lost my train of thought. That was such an amazing story. I feel like it's kind of like really brought me back to that time. Because I feel like all those bands did tour together so much and you were part of that mix. And I feel like you really opened the door for people. Like I saw Frank Turner open for The Offspring and Sum 41 and stuff like that. But I felt like you were sort of the first guy in that scene to really get up there and do that. What was sort of the impetus for that, I guess?
I think one thing was that I didn't think I was... This wasn't my plan to do this for a career. I was in Further Seems Forever. And I loved being in Further Seems Forever so much. But it was a hard band at that time to be in. And I was definitely the odd man out. See, they had been this other band called Strong Arm with a different singer, same lineup, just a different singer. And decided they wanted to stop playing hardcore music. Not that they didn't want to play heavy music, but they didn't want to play hardcore music anymore. They just wanted to add melody. And they liked me from the other bands I was in. We played a lot of shows together. And to make a long story short, we began to have some success, but we really were not getting along. So it was a real bum out because I did dream of being in a successful band. And by which I mean by the definition of success as I was able to see it at that time, like, well, we could go out, we can do tours, a few weeks here, a few weeks there, whenever we get enough vacation time. You know, I never thought like I could be in a band that was like a career necessarily. I thought maybe it could, I mean, that just seemed like a long shot, you know, it seemed like an impossibility, but Further started doing well. Anyway, for many reasons, for different reasons, I felt it was right to leave that band. And I didn't know what I was going to do next. I talked to Chad Gilbert, and I talked a lot about, like, what should I do next? Should I start a band? Would we start a band, Chad and I? Other bands I'd been in, would I go back to them? I wasn't sure. But I did know that I had... So I'd recorded this record, what ended up being the Swiss Army Romance. And... it came out while Further was on tour, and the Further guys were awesome about it. They were like, you should sell that at a merch table. And they also were like, we played this one festival, and Chad Neptune from Further was, he made me play my first set. It wasn't my first show. My first show was really with Saves the Day, like planned show. But my first time I ever really played in front of anybody was at this festival where he goes, hey, we're going to go see this band over in this tent. Further was there to play the festival that night. I said, okay. So we walk over. He said, oh, you're going to love this, man. You're going to love this. And the band we saw was him pushing me up and handing me an acoustic guitar. With like the strap came down to my at shins. I don't know whose it was. And I was like, oh. And there were all these people there because the word had been getting around about this record I made. And my bandmates were super supportive. My bandmates in Further. When I left Further, I had already had this plan of like, I knew this 1 month of October, I had some vacation time and they didn't have it and we couldn't tour. So I planned this tour. And I planned it all around the fact that like Newfound Glory said that I could do some shows with them. And it just meant that I could go hang out with Newfound Glory, really. So I thought I'd do this, basically this 1 month tour, come back home, figure out what I was going to do for my next band and hope it went well. But it was like pretty evident to me from the get-go that I'd found my direction, that I really found my real passion. Once I started playing and playing these songs in front of people, started winning them over, realizing that I had a way to connect with people that I didn't expect to have. I knew how to connect with people when I was like wrapping a microphone cord around my neck.
Right.
And you know, run around my shirt off and, you know, being bananas. But bringing it down to a small place and really finding a way to delve a little deeper, I guess, was just very rewarding and kind of addictive.
Yeah. Seems like you and Chad had very similar kind of trajectory, sort of, because I remember when he left Shai Hulud, when he was doing that in Newfound at the same time, when he went to do Newfound, everyone thought it was insane because Shai Hulud was such a huge kind of band in that scene. Yeah. Like, you want to start a pop punk band? Like, why would you want to do that?
I mean, I said that to him. he was right, you know? And I loved the band. I just said, yeah. Why did you have to leave one to do the other? Why couldn't you do both? Because he was doing both. I know because I played guitar in Newfound Glory for him when he was on tour with Shai Hulud.
Oh, really? I didn't know that.
Yeah. So, you know, I thought he could just continue to do both. But he found his, he knew what his real love was going to be. And I think that he knew that for me too. He was really adamant that I do. Both Chads, they were really adamant that I do Dashboard. Chad Gilbert was incredibly astute about what worked for people. Not like what worked in a general, broad manner. He just could figure out what you were really great at and just kind of foster it in you. And he still does that.
So yeah.
That's why he's a really great producer.
Yeah.
Because I think he finds it before you do. And you're excited as hell to have this new territory to explore.
And then you guys have both been able to kind of reunite with those bands kind of as adults, which must be cool. I mean,
there was a point a couple of years ago we talked about the fact that we, between our side projects and our main bands, it had been like 10 straight years that we toured together every year without fail. And then immediately after defining that, we didn't have a tour again since. But we live in the same town and we spend a lot of time together and, yeah, I'm lucky to have him for a friend.
Definitely. I mean, like, as far as like sort of the new record goes, I mean, I was reading some stuff about it and listening to it, and there's kind of this ideas of like self-examination or self-improvement, or, I mean, like, is this something, are these things you think about a lot, or do you work on a lot of, do you do like any mindfulness stuff, or how do you sort of work on that stuff in your kind of daily life, and how that kind of maybe translates into the record?
Yeah, I'm trying to become a better person. I realized at some point, you know, that just like being easygoing is one thing and being kind is another thing, but like really, you have to really try if you want to. If you want to be a good person, you have to really put forth a lot of effort. That isn't to say that by not trying, you're going to be a bad person.
Right.
But I like to think that I'm improving as a human being and bettering the lives of the people around me and allowing them to better my life.
Is that something, like, did you have like a turning point or like a moment where something happened, or has it just been kind of like a gradual kind of thing for you?
Well, I think it's gradual because I think when you start out in this, in our corner of rock and roll, the indie hardcore post-punk post-hardcore scene, there is a sort of holdover from mentality of like, well, we're going to change the world. And then after a while, and maybe you do just a little bit for some people, which is special. That's a special thing. And then you get to a place where you're like, well, now, like, maybe the approach is just do no harm. And that's where I was for a while, which is a good place. And then there's like another level of like, how can I affect change in myself and in the world? And there's large ways you can do that. And then there's small ways. But I don't think you can do the big things without doing the small things.
Yeah, that's really interesting. I mean, do you feel like, I feel like there must be so many fans of Dashboard who are maybe not familiar with, Morning Again or Culture.
I always forget that.
Yeah. I know. I forget.
I always forget that, you know, it's, you just think if you're in my position, you think they've been around along for the whole ride. They must totally have started where I started. If they connect with my music, they must understand every single album I've ever heard in my life and also be fans of that stuff. And in some cases, it's true, but it's rare.
Yeah. Yeah. I was curious, like, how often do you talk about this stuff and how, what's it like also having fans that are like, I heard this on like the Spider-Man soundtrack and that's I saw you with Third Eye Blind and that's my exposure.
Well, the Third Eye Blind thing was just, it was a great experiment. And I think we gained some fans. So I know we did. I know we gained fans of theirs. I don't know that they're the same kind of lifer fans that we... Look, I enjoyed that summer for sure. And it was a great combination of bands. I didn't know if it would be, but it really worked. But I think that... Well, this comes to mind. Every now and again... Well, let's start with this. Very often, someone will tell me they like this song. They give me a litany of songs and reasons they like the songs.
Okay.
And how it's affected their life and why it's affected their life, why they needed it, how it helped. Sort of the same way I feel about, like, if I'm being honest, it's the same way I feel about The Cure, the band The Cure. But then every now and again, you have a conversation like I had last week. I was playing a show and a woman said to me that, and this is one of the best compliments I get when I get it, is that they walked down the aisle to Stolen, which is a song of mine. And that really is, that's a special thing to hear because that's for some people the biggest, most important day of their life, or one of them. And she said, I just love that song. And I don't know any of your other songs. But you walked down the aisle to it? Oh, I love that song. I really love Scrubs. And I had to like compute for a second, what does that statement mean? And then I remembered there was an episode of Scrubs where they used that song in its entirety with no dialogue. People love TV more than music sometimes, I think, for sure.
I think it's also just connecting the visual.
Yeah.
You know, because that's, you know, people just learn that way.
It's, I think,
like,
so.
Visual and music, they like can envision themselves in those moments with your song as their soundtrack.
I guess so.
You know?
And I'm psyched. I'm psyched, yeah, about that for whatever. However, I just am a little curious. You're not a bit curious yourself? Just like one other song?
Explore a little
just,
bit.
Just yeah, one other
on,
song.
Man. Yeah, this is the most defining song of my life. He has a bunch of other music, but I don't know.
I'm perplexed by, yeah. I mean, like, I get that she loves Scrubs and maybe...
She definitely has seen more than one episode of Scrubs.
For sure, yeah. She watched all the Scrubs.
Yeah.
And she probably had it sounds like I'm taking her to task on this one. I'm not. I'm totally, this is a really moving moment for me to find out this. But I really was like astonished because of the way I connect with music. One song making me feel something strongly will make me do a deep dive into
totally
every song that band's ever written, every band they like, every band other band they've been in, what kind of guitar do they play, how do they get that tone, like I'm a different breed, and so totally. That one to me was like, well, we all have a right to need music for the reasons we need it, and it doesn't have to be my way, it can be your way.
I mean, it's funny because that enthusiasm to, you know, to really dig in is something that everybody, I think, has when they're a kid. It, you know, it's funny we were talking about how music keeps you young, but musicians do kind of hang on to that. And so, and it's not just because it's their career and they need to stay on top of what everybody else is doing. But you do like, you do, you, I hear a song and I'm like, okay, I gotta find out where this came from and what else there is. But I don't think other people do. I think people grow up and they lose that enthusiasm, you know? You know, I mean, when you're a kid, when you're a teenager, you have so much energy to spend on things like that. And I think there's other things that you spend a lot of energy on too that you lose the ability.
I think it's
to.
Also just like becoming comfortable. It's hard to, I mean, we,
it's work. Yeah.
It's work. Be getting obsessed with it for like a couple weeks, which like the same thing happens to me. And I go down like the rabbit hole of like, where did they record it? Where, you know, all of this stuff. It's work.
Yeah.
And some people are just like, whatever, man, I put on the radio and it's like the same 10 songs that I heard when I was.
There'll be another good song on Scrubs.
It's just.
Well played.
There's stuff like that, though, that I'm sure we don't know anything or care. Like, I feel like I get in a car. I'm like, if I bought a car, but yeah, it's a Ford. Like, okay. Like, I, you know, yeah. Some people are like fascinated with like every. Like,
So that's a fair analogy because I was super into cars when I was younger and worked on them with my older brother who was super handy, but. And I was obsessed with it. And I wasn't as good at it as he was. And that became his livelihood.
Right.
And still his passion. And I like them well enough.
Sure.
But I don't work on cars anymore. And I don't obsess about cars like I did. And
yeah, so that's
But that seems specifically teenagery to me. Somehow music feels like it's there for its purpose is to be with you for your whole life.
Well, it is, you know, but the thing is, you know, they even talk about how people, you know, most people, they stop seeking new music after a certain age, you know? I mean, God, I've got friends that they don't listen to anything that was made after the 80s, you know, for real. Like, they don't have a clue.
Do they listen to that music?
Yeah,
do they listen a lot?
They do listen to music. It's still in their life. They just don't seek out anything new or even
I can live with that one.
Yeah.
I can live with that one. I think that like at least maybe you just found what works for you, but it's music. I don't know why music is so, why the idea of music for other people is so important to me. Why
should it matter to me? Fucking musician.
I guess so. But it doesn't have to be my music. I just feel like everybody's made better by music. I don't know.
I feel like maybe that taps into what you were talking about earlier, that like scene, the hardcore scene, that's like the connection. It's like we all connect on this in some similar way. We all have our own individual way, but like as a group, like we're all from all over the place.
Yeah. And I feel like people stay listening to me. Like I know when I go to this Jawbreaker show next month, I'm going to know like half the people there. Like I feel like people that are into that, those bands, like they still care about it.
You got tickets?
I got tickets. Whatever. Are you excited for the Jawbreaker reunion, Chris?
Yeah, I went to two screenings of the movie with the band, and they did their Q&As and all that. And they're one of, if they're not my favorite band, they're definitely top five. I'm really thrilled, and they are good. They're so good right now.
Yeah.
I saw them on Dear You on the tour.
Oh, wow.
With opening for the Smoking Popes. And it was strange. You want to talk about those musical memories. I stood in line. No, I walked through the line passing out flyers for my show. Then I watched two of my favorite bands, one being my favorite band of all time. After the show, I went in directly to the studio for the first time ever and recorded. That was the night we were recording our first, you know, three songs.
Wow.
That's like a special night for me.
What do you think about a Dashboard Jawbreaker tour?
I mean, I'm in.
Yeah. I'll set it up.
Yeah.
I want to adjust to Brazil reunion next.
I would love to. I feel like that. I don't know if it would derail the Jawbreaker thing. I don't know how much energy they have to expend, but man, I would really love that too.
We did a podcast with Chris Daly,
and we talked about it, and he had talked about how it got sort of close and then Blake kind of disappeared.
Well, I think it's like for those bands, it's the same as the Descendants, like with Milo.
Yeah.
It's like the whole thing goes as Blake goes.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, I think you're right.
That's another one I didn't even talk about. Just Descendants is just this massively important band to me. And it's incredible to see that they're finally getting there. Yeah. They're doing as Jawbreaker is now.
Yeah, and also had an awesome documentary about them.
Such a good, maybe one of the best music documentaries I've ever seen.
Yeah.
Liveage.
I didn't know about that original bass player. Like, I didn't know a lot of it. I thought I knew so much about
them. And the original guitar player.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, they had a lot of intrigue in that band for being so like lighthearted, you know. I love that the one guy, the guitar player, like just burned all his possessions, his guitar, and just split town.
Yeah.
Now, that's the way to leave a band. Set it on fire.
All right.
Yeah.
Thank you to Chris for coming by. As we said up top, Dashboard Confessional's new album, Crooked Shadows, arrives February 9th. Their first record for Fueled by Ramen, which is a label that also has been very kind to Going Off Track. So shout out to them. Shout out to Ross for making this interview happen.
Yeah, Ross. Thanks, Ross.
Yes.
If you want to give us a shout out, like with some coin attached to it.
Nice transition. If you want to donate to Cashboard Confessional.
Whoa.
/ Going Off Track, you can do that. But seriously, we have a Patreon page. Thank you to everyone who supported us on Patreon.
Yeah, we've got some great donors. It really makes us feel good. You guys, that's the only money we're getting. We're not getting any advertising pay. So, you know, that beer I was drinking last night when we were recording that podcast came from you.
I'm also pretty sure
who I'm talking to right now. You know who you are.
I'm pretty sure me and Brad don't have jobs, which is why we're recording these at 4 p.m. on a Tuesday.
Very convenient.
Anything you donate is very, very appreciated. If you want to do that, if you want to get, you know, early access to episodes, outtakes, bonus episodes,
at some point
video,
we're gonna have some new merch.
Some merch,
hopefully.
Etc. We're working on some stuff with the logo. Anyways,
patreon.com/goingofftrack.
Yes. If you just want to do it one time, send us like a tip,
a good way to put it.
You tip someone for opening a beer. You tip someone for taking a coffee pot and tilting their arm with it.
Which Jonah just did the gesture.
You can tip us for talking for an hour.
Yeah, man.
If you want. So yeah, you can go to Venmo.com/offtrack. Brad's name will come up and you can throw us $1, $2, whatever, $5. We appreciate that.
$1,000
would be great. Or a Bitcoin would be great.
One Bitcoin. That'd be great.
It could be anywhere from like 10 grand, 17 grand, anywhere in there.
Depends on what day it is.
We'll be thankful. Yes. If you don't have any Bitcoins, that's okay. You can...
I don't.
I don't either, actually. But you can go to iTunes and leave us a nice review and leave us a 5-star review, some comments that'll make us look good. Or you can just tweet at us. We're on Twitter, Going Off Track. I believe we have some social media stuff that might be coming up too. Me and Brad are old and bad at social media, so we are not going to be in charge of it. But
keep your ears open for our 300th live podcast too.
Yes.
We're closing in on that, and we are going to try and do something.
We are. Yeah, we should talk about that. Me and Brad are going to work on a live podcast. And also, thank you again to Pulse Music for hosting Going Off Track.
Absolutely.
At their beautiful studio on West 29th Street. I believe that's it.
And I got nothing else.
Yes. So, and also, if you enjoyed this podcast, check out some of the bands that Chris referenced. Check out Chris's other band, Further Seems Forever, obviously, but check out As Friends Russ, Culture, Morning Again, Damon Dunn, all that stuff. That is such a discount Hot Water Music. That scene is a special place in my heart. Those are all amazing bands. So if you don't know about any of them, definitely check them out. And we'll be back next week with another podcast, right, Brad?
Hopefully.
We will.
We will. We promise.
Okay. We'll be right back.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.